Yeah, Rabbi, today's daf is daf ayin tes. We're holding ayin ches umid beis, three lines from the bottom of the umid. And the Gemara tells us a story. Before we get into the story, why does the Gemara tell us the story? Because at the end of the story, the Gemara is going to refer us back to Reb Shimon of our Mishnah. What did Reb Shimon say in our Mishnah? Reb Shimon said that there's a difference between nechosim hayiduim and nechosim she'enim yiduim. And you remember that Dr. Diamond was mafalpal about this yesterday. Exactly what do we mean by nechasim yidum, enem yidum? There was one shot that we're talking about nechasim yidum are karkois, the yidua, because you can't steal a piece of real estate. It's there. You cannot take it away. It cannot get lost. It can't get misplaced. It remains where it happens to be. While metalton is something which can get misplaced or lost or stolen. That's why this is called nechosim yiduim, and this is nechosim she'enim yiduim. The second shout was if you have nechosim which are far away, that the Baal doesn't even know of their existence. They are in Australia or somewhere similar. Therefore, it's nechosim she'enim yiduim, and they do not, the Baal does not get the payrois from those nechosim. That's what we learned according to Reb Shimon yesterday. I only mention that because that will come at the very end of this sugya. Zimara tells us the itza. There was a woman, the bayad de tavrachinu lenechsa migavra. She's about to get married. She has a bunch of nechosim, and she doesn't want these nechosim to be part of the marriage. Because, as we said, all of her nechsim alug, depending, of course, of whether she got it before she became an arusa or after she became an arusa. We had the four different scenarios yesterday in the Mishnah. But the point is, she wanted to make sure that her husband would not be able to get the payrois from these nechosim. What did she do? She wanted to lavriach. Lavriach means she wanted these nechosim to flee. Now, nechosim can't move. Of course, metalton can move, but they can't move on their own. So how did she want to be mavriach them? Kosvesinu librata. She wrote out a shtar, and in the shtar she says, I give all of my nechosim to my daughter. So therefore, they no longer belong to her. Now, even if the husband knows about this shtar, but the bottom line is, he knows it's no longer hers, it's no longer his wife's, because she gave it away to the daughter. In Siva, what happened at this point? So now, Rashi tells us that she never intended giving it to her daughter in terms of 1,000% that it should belong to her. He only gave it to her, almanas, so that it shouldn't be available to her husband. Anyway, in Siva she got married, and unfortunately Igrisha, and she got divorced. Now at this point the marriage is over. The problem, however, is with the daughter. The daughter says, these nechosim are mine, I have a shtar. And the mommy says, I only gave it to you, lavriach, to go and take it away from my husband. It wasn't given to you, really bona fide, that it should belong to you. This was just what we call a shtar lehavriach, a shtar mevrachas. Mark calls it later a shtar pasim. And therefore, it wasn't intended that it should belong to you permanently. So what do we do? So they went to Din Torah, Asoy Lekami, the Rav Nachman. They went to Rav Nachman. The mommy said, these nechosim are mine. The daughter took out a shtar that mommy gave me all the nechosim. What did Rav Nachman do? Kare Rav Nachman lishtar. He took the shtar from the girl, from the daughter, and he tore it up because the mother never intended to give it to you. She only intended to take it away from her husband. Anyway, this is what Rav Nachman paskin. Rav Onan was very agitated. Is ozu Rav Onan lekamid Mar Ukva. Rav Onan went in front of Mar Ukva. The reason why he went before Mar Ukva, says Rashi, because Mar Ukva was an Av Bezdin, so therefore he was presumably the Poisik, at least in that region or whatever. Is Omar Leis, Rav Onan said to Mar Ukva, and he said in a somewhat derogatory fashion about Rav Nachman, Omulei Chazi Mar Nachman Chako Chazi Mar Nachman Chaklo Heichi Mikra Shtara De Inchi. Look at Nachman Chaklo. The word Chaklo means like a farmer or a peasant. Look what he did. He went and tore up these legitimate shtaras of people. So Rav Onan obviously is trying to say something negative about Rav Nachman. Now Mar Ukva knew that Rav Nachman was no Katlakanya, he was no Amuretz, so he said to him, Omalei Emily Izzi Kufati Uvde Echabe, do me a favor, tell me the whole story from beginning until end. Omalei, so he told him, Hachi Vachi Haba. It was this woman that wanted to be Mavriach her Nechosim from her husband, and therefore she wrote a shtar to her daughter, etc., etc. Amalei, so when Ma'ukva heard this, he went and said to Rav Onan, Shtam Avrachas Ka'amris. You're not talking about a normal shtar, you're talking about a Shtam Avrachas. Shtam Avrachas means a shtar where the Nechosim flee. In other words, it's a shtar for the purpose of concealing the Nechosim from her husband. Hachi Omer Chani Loi Bar Idi Omer Shmuel Moira Hano Hiro Ani. Shmuel said about himself that he's a Moira Hiro. Now he's not saying this because he's trying to be a Balgaiva, but rather Rashi points out from the Sechta Sanhedrin, not any Ruv can just go and Paskin Shalis. He has to have Heter Hiro to be able to Paskin, and he says, I received a Heter Hiro to be able to Paskin Shalis, and I'm telling you what's the aloche by a case of a shtar mevrachas. So he said, if I get such a shtar that comes to my hand, I'm going to go and tear it. Mamish, word for word, just like we saw by Rav Nachman.
Nachman's a big expert.
So therefore, Mar Ukva says now to Rav Onan, it's not only Rav Nachman that tears these shtars, but even Shmuel. Well, halacha kishmuel bedini, he also paskin that if he gets such a shtar mevrachas, he tears it up because he feels that these are worthless. Aha. Okay. It's only Rav and Rav Nachman. Time of my, what's the reason why? I can understand, because the Rabbanon look at a shtar like this and they say, would a normal individual give away all of his nechasim to somebody else and leave nothing for himself? Obviously he's doing this with some sort of ulterior motive, and therefore it's not his real intent to give the entire nechasim to this individual. So he said, Rava, I can understand that that's what Shmuel had in mind, and I can understand why you felt that this is the proper psak in our case. But Hani Mil Lachrini, wouldn't that be a correct halacha if you're talking about Smith giving all of his property to Jones, and Smith and Jones are unrelated, and he gives them everything? Doesn't make sense. Avalabrata, if you're talking about a mother giving to a daughter, Yehiva can ganz meglich sein that maybe she intended to give all of her nechas. After all, it's her dear daughter, and therefore that's why she gave it to her. So why do you automatically tear up the shtar? Maybe even Shmuel would agree in this case. Said Rav Nachman, what you said, Rav, of course, makes a lot of sense. However, that's the daughter compared to Achrini. But here we're talking about the daughter compared to herself. Compared to herself, nevertheless, nobody gives away all of the nechasim and leaves themselves totally without anything. And therefore, since she did give her daughter everything, we realize that it's time of rachas, and even Shmuel would agree to what I paskin to go and tear up the shtar. Yeah.
So if the husband would contest it, he would have the same din also. He could get the nechasim look. L'chaya.
Okay, we're going to talk about the husband at the end of the Gemara, right before we get to the Mishnah.
That's the logic.
Yeah, 100%.
But don't we just have a similar story with Rav Onan and Mar Ukva? Remember, he went to Mar Ukva to complain about Rav Huna, and he asked him a pasuk, and he.
Right. We had about Rav Onan and Mar Ukva only a few blad ago. It's true. Mm-hmm. A different case scenario, but the same individual. Yeah. Yes.
Is this story implied that this is the only way to protect the chosim? I mean, maybe can she just write a prenup or something? Say, I'm coming to the marriage, but I'm keeping some of my own
I don't understand too much about prenuptial agreements. I do know there's a big, big controversy among modern days authorities whether these are these valid or not. So why enforceable, whether they are or not, I have no idea. You'd have to ask Rabbanim that deal in that area. There are many Rabbanim that think that prenuptial agreements are a great idea, and many of them think that they're worthless. So you have to speak to them whether it works or doesn't work, based on this, you have to speak to people that are familiar with this sugya. But this is the way she did it, to be mavriach and nechosim, by writing such a shtar to conceal them, by giving them to the daughter. And both Rav Nachman and Shmuel agreed that this shtar it helped vis-a-vis the husband, but it didn't help vis-a-vis the daughter, because after the shidduch broke off, after they got a get, they allowed the mother to get the nechosim back. What about the husband? We'll talk about that shortly. Frank Dimar. The Gemara is asking now a kasha on Shmuel and ultimately also on Rav Nachman. Meisvei, we learned in a brayse haroitzer shetavriach nechaser mi bala. Oh, our case, a woman that's trying to be mavriach. Kate said he always said, what should she do? Koyseves shtar pasim laachirim. She should write a shtar pasim. Now the word shtar pasim over here is a borrowed term because really shtar pasim is used in a different connection. The normal connotation of shtar pasim is that if you have a person that wants to appear wealthy, what does he do? The reason why he wants to appear wealthy, for instance, is he wants to make a wealthy shidduch. So he wants people to see, oh, he's a reicha mensch, he's very, very wealthy. So what does he do? He goes over to someone else and he asks him, do me a favor, please. Go and let's write a shtar that you owe me $500,000. And you owe me $500,000 and it's payable in a week from now. So then after that, when the shatkin comes, I'm going to say, show me your bank account, show me how much you have, I'll show him the shtar. Look, in another week I'm going to have $500,000. Ooh, oh, a reicha mensch, $500,000. We're not talking about the Chofetz Chaim aspect. We're just talking about what a shtar pasa means. The shtar pasa means that a shtar that makes him look wealthier. The reason why it's called pasim is from the Lashon pius. Pius means that you ask a favor from someone else, and therefore you ask him, please, to appease me in my request. The favor that I'm asking you to do is, please write out this shtar, this note that says that you owe me, that you owe me kach v'kach. Don't worry, I'm never going to collect. We're best friends. Chulil v'chas, I wouldn't even think of collecting on it, but I want to be able to go and show that I'm rich. And if the person agrees to it, it's called a shtar pasim. Now this has nothing to do with us, but rather, here the shtar pasim is, again, that one person writes to another person a shtar that I'm giving you all of my nechasim, and he goes and he appeases him and tells him, this is not real, we're just doing it to havriach, to go and hide the nechasim from someone else. So therefore, that's why the Gemara uses this term shtar pasim, although it typically has a different connotation. But in both cases, it comes from the shorish, the word pius, that you're making, you're appeasing someone and asking him or her for a favor to go and enter into this type of shtar. Anyway, so if a woman wants to mavriach the chosim, what she can do is, she can write such a shtar pasim lachir, divrei Shem Gamliel. In other words, just like we said until now. However, chachamim oimrim, chachamim say, what you're doing is, you're doing something very, very dangerous financially. Because rotza metzachik bo. What the recipient can afterwards do is, yo, it's a wonderful idea, you want to be mavriach only the chosim ibala, write it all out to me. And then after that, the person will say, it's taka mine, I have a shtar. So therefore, be very, very careful, say the chum. Ratzim etzachik bo, that recipient can afterwards, fafun, can go and make a galechta from this whole thing by saying, it all belongs to me. If you really want to be certain not to have an issue, say the chum, achetichtev loy mehayoyim, she should go and write in the shtar that I makna to you all of these nechosim from today, but only if and when I want to consummate this sale or this present to you of all of these nechosim. How does this help? What does that mean? So if you look at the Rashi Acha Tichtoiv, Rashi is about two or three lines below or next to where we're learning. Acha Tichtoiv says Rashi, Yehotis or Pinchas, yeah?
Yes.
I'm giving these nechosim to you today. On the one hand, it works vis-a-vis the husband. Why? If the husband says, listen, I'm your husband, I want the pay raise from these nechosim aluk, Toimar, she will say, Ani roitzim matana. She will say, Likisha Erza, and now I am Reutza, and now it works Mehayoim Limafreya, Venimza Kayemis Limafreya. And therefore, when the husband says, hey, I want the payers, she'll say, these payers, this property doesn't belong to me, already retroactively from a week ago, from a month ago, from a year ago, it belongs to Ploini Almoin, it doesn't belong to me. So therefore, I'm stuck, I can't give you payers. The Imzesh Nichtav Shtar. What happens if the recipient says, oh, I want to go and take these nechosim? Toimar, any rights? And then she'll say, it's only kishayoyim ukshia, but I'm not rights. So therefore, it was never konilucha. So therefore, she can try to use such a shtar and work on both ends. Of course, the only problem with something like that is, what happens if both of them come at the same time, or they make a kanunya together, then that would be problematic. But the Gemara and Rashi don't address that. But anyway, if one, each one comes on their own, she'd be able to to go and make a shtar, say the chacham, legitimately to be able to go and both conceal the assets from their husband, as well as make sure the recipient doesn't have a right to receive those nechasim. And that's the end of this brisa. So now the kash of the gemara, the meisvei, is we see from this brisa that the chachamim, and l'chayr we would pass like the chachamim, what would the chum hold? Taima the kos v'leyachi. The only time this type of shtar would work is if she adds the magic words, mehayoyim ulik she'erzim. But if she doesn't write that, what happens? Kanani lekech would be kainer. So Ibazoi, Shmuel, and Rav Nachman, are you arguing with the chachamim of this price? No, because it depends whether the person who's writing the shtar is writing out kula, he or she is giving away everything. In other words, our woman over here, the wife that's trying to be mavriach the chosim ibala, if she writes everything, or she only writes some of the nechasim. Now, what's the difference between everything and some of the nechasim? We have this nafkimina ulsa legabi nebuch ashchimara, person who's about to pass away. If he or she, cholila b'chas, goes and gives away all of the nechasim to somebody, and then after that, shchimara baruch Hashem has a miraculous recovery, then he or she can take all the nechasim back. Because he or she says, the only reason why I gave everything away to Yankel, Beryl, or Miral is only because of the fact that I thought that I was about to pass away. But now that baruch Hashem, I'm back in good health, then I want to take everything back. But that's only the kula. If it's been mitzasa, then it could very well be that the tak intended to give away that mitzvah. Because if they didn't intend the way to give this, why do they have to give everything? Anything? You don't even have to. You're right. Anyway, but the point is, if you do bekula, then the person can have charata. If it's bemikzas, you can't have charata, because who forced this individual to say, I'm giving away half? By the fact that we say that half and didn't give away everything, in other words, the person said, I want to be in the safe side, because after all, there's at least a 5% chance that I'm going to have a refuah, and therefore I'm not going to give away everything. So why'd you give away anything? It's a chesimin that anything that he or she gave away was with a real matana, and the rest he or she kept for themselves for the later years, for the golden years, as they call it. Anyway, the same nafkimina we have over here too. It depends whether or not she wrote the all of her nechasim. So our case of the hi'itza, she wrote all of the nechasim away for her daughter. And that was the same case by Shmuel. All of the nechasim. Oh, you write all the nechasim. So what's the reason a person would write all the nechasim? Says Rashi, anan sadi legomru makna. All of us here that are learning this Gemara know that she never intended to give everything away. Why did she give everything away? That what it says in the case of this Braisa, the Chum say, that if you give away everything, I'm sorry, if you give away your Nechasim, and you did not write Mehayoyim Ulik She'erza, then the recipient can say, Rotza Mitzachikba, that's talking about that the person gave away only Mitzas Nechasim. Why would you give away Mitzas Nechasim? You should have given away everything. By giving away Mitzas Nechasim is a simon that Taka, you did have Gemiras Das, and then you could not tear up the shtar, and it would be effective. The recipient could hold on to it. If you want to go and protect against such a situation, tichtav lo mayoyim ulik shetz. Anyway, so bekula miktas. Freiti gemara. But let's go back to the original question that a number of people asked as we were learning the sugya. This is very, very good that she's trying to go and bemariach nechasim from her husband. And we said that according to Rav Nachman, according to Shmuel, it will be, if the recipient wants to keep the nechasim, we're going to tear up the shtar and not give it to him or her. If that's the case, Freiti gemara, v'loy kanin lekeach nikninu baal. So ibazoi, you can't have it both ways. Either the baal has a right to it, or the lekeach has a right to it. So if she in fact bona fide gave it to a third party, then it's not hers, then of course the baal cannot eat payers on it. But if she didn't give it to somebody else, in fact this whole shtar is so weak that you bring it to the rabbi tears it up and tells you this is gornish, this is fictitious, this is a fraud, it's a deception, etc. So then why doesn't the baal have the right in the chosim? So the chayra, she hasn't accomplished anything by writing out such a shtar for her daughter. Omer Abaye. Says Abaye, I'll tell you why this Havrocha helped vis-a-vis the husband, even though it did not go to the daughter bona fide, legitimately, and went back to the wife. The reason is because the Chacham gave it the status of Nechasim She'eni Yidum. Nechasim She'eni Yidum, as we explained at the end of yesterday's sugya, and that's why I was makdim before we started the sugya, what the Hemshech HaDvarim was to yesterday's sugya. Normally, Nechasim She'eni Yidum means, for instance, that they're in Australia, they're on the North Pole. The husband didn't even know that they existed. So therefore, at the time of the chasana, he didn't have in mind on these nechasim she'enim yidum, and they do not have the status of nechsim alug, from which he would take the peiros. Says the Gemara, the same thing applies now to these nechasim that she went and rode over to her daughter. Since she rode over the daughter, the husband didn't even realize that these belonged to the wife. Could be that he never even knew that they belonged originally. Or even if he knew that they belonged originally, he assumed, oh, looks like a star, she gave everything away, I have nothing left, I'm going to marry her for her chesed and her midos and not for her money. Only subsequently did he find out, when he learned the daf, that according to Rav Nachman and Shmuel, the dad's all worthless, but it's already too late, because at the time of the marriage...
Why is it too late? If I get property that I didn't know about, And then I learn about it.
Yeah. Look at last Rashi before the Mishnah. You see the Rashi before the Mishnah. Ken chosim she'enim yidum she'al menas she'enin shelo nisa. When he married her on the, not the explicit but the implicit condition that didn't belong to her, because he saw shtaros that nothing, these things don't belong to her anymore. The sover she'al matana gemur. He had assumed that the matana was good, and therefore, since he made that assumption, and when he married her, it was not the intent to go and extract the peiros from these nechasim, because he assumed that these nechasim don't belong to her. That's Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon our mission that holds nechasim she'enim yidum lebal, he doesn't get the benefit of the peiros. And we start a brand new Mishnah, but it's not.
The Chumman didn't give it to him, the whole din of Nechsem.
Yeah.
If you don't know about it, it's a shame.
Remember what did Reb Gamliel say in our Mishnah? Al Rishoinim al Achadoshim Anu Boishim. We're upset about this whole thing that husbands have rights. After all, she earned these monies. She received the monies as a present. She received it from her grandfather. Why should the husband have rights to all of this? I'm upset about it, says Reb Gamliel. So our Gemara is telling us, the Chum said, that in this type of situation, Loit Reb Shimon, they're considered to be Chosim she'eni yidum, and he does not have rights to them after all. Zok to Mishnah. Instead of having karka fall to her, what happens if in the Yerusha, or for that matter, she got a matona, she won the lottery. Nafluk sofim, she got money. Aha. Now the husband, when he gets married to her, has a right to peiros. How do you get peiros from money? Says the Gemara, I'll tell you. Yilkach behen karka, take that money and buy a piece of property. V'oichel peiros, and that property is going to produce every year income, and he'll be able to eat the peiros from that property. So
he has a right to sell it, to take her money and use it for this?
Exactly right. That's part of it. That's
like it's his, really.
The peiros and the nechsim alug entitled, he doesn't have to be the one that buys the property. He can go and say, you buy the property.
Yeah,
but
okay.
She has to buy a piece of property.
It's a notch above
she, right? She keeps the care and the karka for herself, but he eats the peiros, like it says in our Mishnah. And by the way, this is not just a total freebie. You remember from the previous Mishnayos and previous Gemaras that it's peiros tachas prekuna, yes. As a result of the right that he has the right to take those peiros. If chas v'sholem, she finds herself in terrible mortal danger because she's been taken into captivity by captors, then he has the absolute duty to go and pay the ransom to get her out from that terrible situation. Anyway, so you go and buy a piece of property, he eats peiros. Continues the Mishnah, what happens if the property that she received was peiros hatlushim in a karka? We'll see shortly in the Mishnah that it's not only that she received the peiros tlushim, she also received karka, but the karka part we know, that the karka that she received, all peiros that will grow in the future will belong to the husband. But the question is, what happens if she received this part of the Yerusha, part of the Matana? She received peiros which already severed from the ground, already are edible. Would you give those to the husband? Says the Mishnah. What'd you say?
Why not?
Oh, so you hold like the Chacham, or they say that you take do give it, but not we're not up to the end. Baltimore's. Anyway, peiros atlushim in a karka, yilkach ben karka, take the payers themselves. The payers have the same status as ksofim. Go and sell them, buy karka, v'oichel payers, and the husband will eat the payers from what was at one time the payers atlushin, which have been converted now into karka, and now he'll eat the payers from that karka. What the Gemara is telling us, what the Mishnah is telling us, is that the word payros is not to be defined literally as fruit. It means the income from the principal that she owns. What is the principal that she owns? The payros atlushin. So even though we normally think of payros, it's payros. His payros, these are payros. You make the same boyer priyates on the payros, assuming that they're not bananas or something like that. But the point is, the payros atlushin. But since she received that as part of her yerusha, or part of the lottery, or part of the matana, so that's part of the Karen. Since that's the Karen, he doesn't have a right to the Karen. That's her principal. And therefore, how do you convert that to be able to have him have payrois from the payrois? You have payrois from the payrois by having her sell the payrois, now buying a piece of karka. The karka belongs to her, and he'll take the payrois, the future payrois that will grow from that karka. What happens if what she received was not payrus exclusion? She received payrus hamuchubarim bekarka, which means that at the time of the Arusha, time of the lottery, whatever, she received not only a piece of land, but it was already March, April, where there were payrus attached to the trees, and now she has received both karka and those payrois. Now we have a machloket between Reb Meir and the Chacham. Om Reb Meir, shaman oisa kamihi yofa, bepeiros, the kami yofa beloy peiros, or moise yilkoch ben karka vu oichel peiros. So the Gemara is telling us is once again these peiros mechubarim bekarka. This is part of the keren that belongs to her. However, it's, and therefore it's just similar to the peiros hatlushim. What do you do now? You don't go and value these peiros as if they were tlushim, because they are not tlushim. They're mechubarim. So you're saying, what's the difference between payers which are tlushin and payers which are chubarim? There's a big difference in the marketplace. If I happen to be a person that owns an orchard, and I own payers hatlushin, they have one value. If the payers are still mechubar lekarka, they have another value. What's the other value? Value difference number one is the labor to go and pluck all the payrois and to go and wash them and put them into nice boxes and to cart them and to sell them and to ship them out to other places. But another difference is, if the payrois are not ripe yet, you still may have to wait another 2 weeks or a month until they are ripe. So the point is, a payri which is still attached to the tree is not, doesn't have the same value as a pri which is already cut from the tree. So how do you determine the value of those payrois mechubarim? Says Reb Meir, very simply, you go over to real estate brokers and tell them, I have a field located here on corner 91st Street and Western Avenue. The field has a beautiful orchard of 20 fruit trees. And he says, but are there fruit on the trees? So it depends. If there are no fruit on the trees, it has value X. If it has fruit on the trees, it's X plus 1 or X plus 5 or whatever, because there are fruit which in another week or 2 or 3 or 4 we will cut and we're going to go and sell, and therefore it has an additional value. So therefore, as the Rameyer says, Shaman Oysa Kami Yofa Bepeiros, figure out how much this field is worth with the peiros on them like they are today. Bekami Yofa Bloy Peiros, what happens if you were to sell the same field in the middle of the summer or in the middle of the winter when there are no peiros on the tree? Moisa. Moisa means the difference between the two. Yilka ben karka, go and buy a piece of karka, bu'oichel peiros, which means this baal will have the right to eat these peiros when they will be cut in another week or two or three or in a month, whenever they'll be ripe. He'll be able to not only eat them, he'll be able to go and sell them. However, since this is part of the Keren, because these are the payrois that fell to the woman at the time of the Yerusha, Nu'oi Bazoi, so then he has to go and, it's part of the Keren, so how can he go and eat it? Says Zimar, he's going to go and buy these payrois from her by paying her the value of the payrois. What's the value of the payrois? The difference between a karka with payrois and a karka without payrois. And if the difference is $50, he says, okay, now to take $50, now the payrois belong to him, and then at some point in the future, when he's ready, he will go and cut the payrois and either eat them or sell them, because he's entitled to the payrois of this property.
We're taking a snapshot of the property now to get a value of what the karka is, the, sort of the nichsei maluk karka is, for purposes of what he's entitled to?
That's exactly right. And the reason why we're taking a snapshot now, explains Rashi, is because whatever grew in his rishus, meaning after he had rights to these, to this karak and to these peiros, then it's considered to be his.
Entirely,
he's entitled to peiros.
Entire
the peiros are entirely his. But those that grew pre-coming into his rishus, meaning before she got the Yerusha, all these peiros had already grown 50%, 80%, whatever it was not in his rishus, so therefore that's all her karen, he doesn't have rights to it. I'm sorry? Since she brings it with her, it's part of her karen, part of her nechsim aluk. And that being the case, so how is he going to get the right to the peiros from these peiros? He'll be able to go and get the continued growth, and then afterwards, the market value will, it will appreciate, presumably, when you cut the peiros. And now they are set to be, ready to be sent out to the marketplace. Now they have a greater value because they've been cut and they've been packaged and blah, blah, blah. So all of that, he has the rights to that because that's already grown in his rishus after they've already been married, after she received the rusha. So therefore, as you said, you take the snapshot of how much it was worth at the time that she received them, and we're assuming that she received them post-Nisuin, therefore, because if she receives it pre-Nisuin, then you wouldn't look at that moment, you'd only look at the times when his rights begin to accrue when they get married. Anyway, so you take a look at the time when she received them. At the time she received them, the peiros, they were mechubarim, and they had a value of X. At 3 weeks later, when we're going to cut them, they're going to have a value of Y. But not forgetting on the, about the peiros, the mayor focuses on the karka, that the karka without the peiros is worth X, and with the peiros is worth X plus 50, or whatever it is. So therefore, the husband gives the 50 to her to pay her for the keren. And now, when they grow further, and then when you cut them, he'll be able to use them because this will be now the payers of the Karen that he paid her off for. What is she going to do with the $50 that she received out of Karen? She'll buy another piece of property, which will again belong to her, and subsequently when it grows payers, he'll be able to have those payers in the future. And this is what the Tanakhama said, or this is what the Rameyer said. The Chachamim and the Chacham disagree with Rameyer, and they say, "Hamuchubarim lekarka shaloi, vatlushim lekarka shalor." The Chacham say, and this is perhaps what Barry was thinking all along: anything which is peiros, peiros is peiros is peiros. Don't try to convert peiros into keren, even though the mechub lekarka they belong to him because looks like a peri, it smells like a peri, it eats like a peri. No, it's a peri.
It's like bottle to the karka.
If you will, you can call it bottle karka. Other Mefarshim explain that according to the Chum, the key defining moment is not the moment of when she received it, but the defining moment is when you're going to cut it from the ground.
If you,
yeah, but the only question is that helps if it's ready to be cut today. What happens if it's only going to be ready to cut in a week from now or in a month from now? Then it's not roy lichtzer yet. But the svara over here, according to the Chum, is that if it's mechubal karka, I don't look at it at this moment. I look at the time of the talisha of the cutting, because at the cutting, that's when it really starts having value. I can have a million fruit on top of my tree. If I can't get them down from the tree, then it's worthless. It's only if I'm able to go and remove them and then sell them. Oh, now it has a value. So therefore, the cutting from the tree, the harvesting, that's the moment of truth, if you will. If that point is before he received it, in other words, when it's still in, when she received the Yerusha, she received Peter's Tolution, that we already said at the top of the Mishnah, that's certainly hers, because now that it's cut from the tree, that's the defining moment, that happened before it came into his Rishus, it belongs totally to her, and that's why there's no machlokes about Peter's Tolution. However, it's Peter's Mechubarim, the defining moment is when we're going to cut them subsequently, at that moment it'll already be Shaloi, because at that point he already has his right to the Peter's of this Karka, therefore Mechubarim the Karka is Shaloi, that Tolushim in the Karka is Shaloi, like we said earlier, the Yilkach ben Karka, Voichel Peter's, like we said at the outset of the Mishnah about the Peter's that Tolushim.
So merely going to the Shita, he's always anticipating. Shamir is going according to the Shita, he's anticipating its value, as it were.
And that's why, and that's why you're saying?
So Ramirez says that since that he's already vested in it, as it were, as of right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but that's the, we're talking about the Chum now. Chum say he's vested already now. Ramirez is not vested, she's vested in the whole thing. We have to think about whether we can try to connect it. Anyway, so the Masa Machlokes Rav Meir and the Chacham. So now Reb Shimon Oimer. Now, where's the focus? Where's the essential moment of? Where's the key point of the Machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chacham? The Gabi Peiros Mechuborim Bekarka. Whether or not at the moment that she receives the Yerusha when she's married to him, are these Peiros Mechuborim Bekarka, do they belong to her, or do they belong to him? Now, let's see what Reb Shimon holds. Reb Shimon says something which is, seems to be kind of poetic. Reb Shimon Oimer, Mokum Shiyofa Koicha Bikni Sosa, Hura Koicha Biyitziyasa, Mokum Shura Koicha Bikni Sosa, Yofa Koicha Biyitziyasa. So says Reb Shimon, perhaps you want to call it an anomaly or an irony, but the point is, Mokum Shiyofa Koicha Biyitziyasa, at the time of the marriage, he had a Yipui Koich in one respect. Yipui Koich means he had certain additional advantages or stronger koyach, but when they get divorced, unfortunately, it's the other way around. He loses certain rights. Certain things where he has a lesser strength when they get married, you have a koyach mitziyasa. But when it leaves the marriage at the time of the get, then he has a stronger koyach.
Paradox.
Exactly. Okay. So a paradox, an irony, an anomaly, whatever beautiful term you want to use. So now, Kate said, explain to me what you mean. This is very poetic, but what's made the sachlis? I'll explain to you. Peiros and mechuborim the karka. If you have peiros which are attached to the karka, beknisasa shaloi, when they are getting married, in other words, when it comes into his rishus, they belong to him. See, notice what it says here: peiros mechubor the karka, when they are getting married, and now the peiros are mechubor already. When they fall to her birusha, they belong to him. Does that sound like Reb Meir, or does that sound like the Chacham? Remember, according to Reb Meir, the Chacham say, in fact, the Gemara is going to ask, and Rashi already points out now, Reb Shimon, hainu tanakama, hainu Chacham. There's no nafkamina between the Chacham and Reb Shimon on this point. The Gemara is going to ask that towards the end of today's blot on the Amud Beis. What's the machloik is my binai, the machloik between Reb Shimon and the Chacham. But anyway, so Reb Shimon says that the Peiros Mechuborim Lekarka belong to him. Ubitziyasa, when they leave the marriage, shalom. What means when they leave the marriage? At the time, chas v'sholom l'mushal of a get, where he now returning back the nechsimalug to her. What happens if they're peiros which are attached to the tree? Zokreb Shimon, they belong to her. She takes back the nechsimalug and she takes back the peiros which are connected to the tree.
Really, what is that? It's bottle. It goes together with the car.
Okay, so there you go. We're going to see. The Gemara is going to answer on the Amud Beis that's where the machloikis lies between Reb Shimon and the Chacham about whether yitziyasa shalah. Because the husband says, what are you talking about? The value of these payers have already grown 50%, 80%. I want to keep them. Gemara will talk about that on the Amud Beis in Yetushim. But at this point, the Gemara is saying is that the Gabi Peiros Mechubarim, the Knisasa, his strength when he gets married, it's shaloi. That's the Yofa Koicha Beknisasa. That if when they got married and when she received these Nechos and they were Peiros Mechubarim, it's his. Like the Chachamim said, not like Reb Meir. Ubitziyasa, when the marriage ends, she received those peiros which are now connected to the tree in peiros mechubar. Now, vatalushim and akarka, what about if they're tolush? So we said in our Mishnah, b'ktisasa shalah, that they belong to her and you have to go and sell them, and yilkoch ben karka, and it's her keren, and he only gets the peiros. However, ubitziyasa, if and when this chas shalom gets, then shalom, because of the peiros solution, it's his peiros, and he can to retain them. After all, he got them as soon as they became tolush, even though now there's a get now, but it's already his. Therefore, that's the irony that it goes back and forth. Okay, good. Zok to Gemara yet. Now, the Gemara is going to tell us, we said at the beginning of the Mishnah, that if Kesef, or for instance, Peiros Tolushin, fell to her from her grandfather, Lamashal, that you have to go and buy Karka. Now, Karka, of course, has many different definitions. Even today, real estate could mean, of course, an empty lot. It could mean an orchard. It could mean a piece of property where you have a skyscraper. It could be you have a little hut on it. Exactly which one of these properties would you go and buy? Ezoktimar Pshita Ara Ubati Ara. If the real estate that we're talking about is to buy a piece of land, a piece of land meaning a field where you can go and grow all types of crops, or you're talking about a piece of land that has on it bottom, that has on it houses, which one is preferable? Now, it could be today, real estate market is different, especially here in Manhattan. People would go and think that a piece of property that has on it a skyscraper would be worth more than an empty lot in which you can go and grow different types of plants and stuff like that. That's what we would normally think. However, Gesundheit. We're talking about the times of Chazal. Gesundheit. Apparently things were a little bit different. And therefore, Ara, a fertile land that you can go and grow crops. Ubati, or you're going to have the income from houses, from apartments. Ara. Then the preference would be to do Ara. Now what means the preference, says Rashi? Either of the two, the husband or wife, could both protest and say, I don't want to buy Bati. I don't want to have to deal with tenants. Certainly not here in Manhattan. Rather, rent control, rent subsidizer, and stabilizing the courts and the judges. I'm not interested. I don't want any of this. I just want the Ara. Then the Haskama is Ara. You go and get the property. The Ara is considered to be better than Batim. What's the reason why? Says Rashi, very, very simple. Because Ara remains forever. Batim are here today, and Chas V'Shalom, there could be a building collapse tomorrow, and the whole thing goes down. There could be a fire, Chas V'Shalom, and nothing is left, like Nebuchadnezzar having the Flatbush a few weeks ago, Rahman al-Islam.
When you talk about the Batim, you're talking about the property with the house.
Yeah, yeah, presumably.
Even if the house falls, you still have the karka afterwards.
It's true. In fact, the Gemara is going to focus that on the Amud Beis, whether you can have a remaining interest in the Karen, even if most of the Karen goes poof, you still have remaining interest.
Does it mean that they sell the house because they want
to buy
the house?
No, she got ksofim.
Now,
the question is, what do you use the ksofim for? So it says in the Mishnah, Hilkach ben karka. So what type of karka?
Oh,
so you have two choices.
Eitz HaToyva, basically.
Yeah. Well, it's not only Eitz HaToyva.
If
there is a dispute between the husband and wife, he says, I want to go and bati, and she says, Ara.
Exactly.
And either one has the trumping card over the other, meaning that if he wants Ara and she wants bati, you go with him. If he wants bati and she wants Ara, you go with her. Look at the Rashi. You see, the fourth wide line of the wide lines of the Rashi, Pshitali Aru Bati Arab, then Nofel Loksof, Ubo Likach Lo Karka, Ze Oimer Karka Bazria Ani Reutze, Vizoise Meris, that Batim Ani Reutze Likach, Oi Epech O Fakert, then Ara, Zukt Rashi, Zavnina Minay, you go and buy the Ara. Why? Number one, Shishchor Meruba, there's a nice income, Veina Markebis, it doesn't spoil, Ushnei Ma'akvim, both of them can be Ma'akiv on the other. I want to have a karka that produces luscious fruit to be able to eat and to be able to sell, and therefore I want dafka ara. What happens if he says, I don't want to deal with agriculture, I mean, get my feet all muddy and fertilizer, that's not for me, I'd rather go and buy a bais. I don't want to go and buy bricks and stones and mortar and wood, because it could be destroyed. And therefore the Karen is going to be reduced in value and in existence. And therefore I prefer going mine the Ara rather than the Bati. So each one of them can go and be moich against the other, and whoever wants the Ara will win. Yeah?
We just saw before that the ultimate put down was to call somebody a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
So you see him maybe schmutz.
Exactly. Oh, very good, very good. It's good to show. Anyway, so that's Ari Ubati is Ari. Back to the Gemara. Yes.
With the same sfora reply with Fakert, I mean, with a place like Manhattan, obviously real estate coming in, rental income is going to be
much greater than growing bananas. I would say so. Halacha l'maaseh, you'd have to look up Shulchan Aruch, and our Gemara is presumably talking about an agricultural society where agriculture was far more valuable than the rent stream from Batim. But halacha l'maaseh, you'd have to look in the Mefarshim and the Poskim. Continuing on, the Gemara is going to give another 5 or 10 examples of the exact same vein. What happens if the machloikas between them is Bati v'dikli? One of them says, I want to go and buy houses. The other one says, I want to go and buy dikolim. Dikolim are palm trees, date palm trees that grow dates. Then Bati. Then you follow the one that says a Bati. What's the reason why, says Rashi? It goes very simple. Here we're talking about the trees without the karka. And says it Rashi, an ilon osui liyabesh. A tree ultimately is going to dry up and die. It may happen in a year, may happen in 20 years. But eventually, the tree is going to die. Mashenkin the Bati. batim, if they are constructed properly, could last for 100 years. Therefore, bati is better than the dikli. What happens if I have dikli ve'ilni, if I have palm trees, date trees, and I have other types of trees, then dikli is better. Now Rashi doesn't say whether the other types of trees are fruit trees or not. Rashi just says shar ilonois. So if it's so much fruit trees, it could be that dates are more valuable, more oivala soicha, especially in Bavel. The Gemara says that they used to go and sell dates everywhere very cheaply, and therefore people used to eat them, and some of them used to get hashmanesh from it. But anyway, but the point is, I know some people don't know what hashmanesh, but that's okay, you don't have to know. But the point is that that dates were a oivala soicha type of commodity, while other payers apparently not. So it could be that pshat, or it could be like the Gemara is going to say in a moment, ilni were also sold for firewood. And then it's going to be dependent on whether it's gizoy machlef or ain gizoy machlef. Gizoy machlef means whether after you cut half of the tree, whether it rejuvenates and grows once again. Some trees do, some trees don't. We'll talk about that a little bit further down on the Amud. But the point is, if it's a question between dikli or ilni, dikli are more valuable, therefore go for the dikli. What happens with ilni vegufni, other types of trees, and gef and vines? Apparently ilni have a longer life expectancy than vines, and therefore ilni, rather go and buy the ilni and don't buy a vineyard. That was the first part of the one. Now we have a new shtickle. This is really unrelated to the previous shtickle. What happens if Ab Zardisa upeder de kavri? Now this is not a choice between the two, but rather the Gemara is telling us about these two. Ab means a forest. Zardisa means a type of tree. In particular, Rashi says it's a tree of Uzredin. Now you're wondering, what are Uzredin? These happen to be peiros, which are not choshev. To give an example, presumably it's something like crab apple trees. If you go in the country, you see trees that have these little apples, and people say don't even eat those because you just get a stomach ache from them and then you can't eat them. So those are type of peiros which are not choshev, which are considered to be really inedible or not choshev enough. So much so, says Rashi, v'koitzen oisen la'etzim, you're allowed to, even though normally we know there's a terrible iser to go and kill, to cut an eitz ma'achol. Nevertheless, apparently there is no problem over here. Halacha l'maisel, checker Shulchan Aruch, speak to your paisik. But Rashi says, because lo'hayah pirion choshev, koitzen oisen la'etzim, they would go and cut down these trees for firewood, or construction wood, or whatever. That's Abazardisa. Or you have Peter the Kavri. Peter the Kavri means a school of fish. Doesn't just mean a school, it means a pond, like a large aquarium built into the ground where you have a lot of fish over there. And that's what she received for her Yerusha. So now the question is, what is the status of these trees which are meant to be cut, and these peiros, meaning, and the fish? Are these considered to be keren? And if it's keren, then you'd have to go and sell it and buy karka, and then the husband gets the peiros, just like sofim and peiros tolushin. Or do you consider this to be like peiros? And the husband can say, I'm going to go and cut the trees, that's the produce of these trees. There is no produce, these are just trees, either barren trees, or trees that have inedible types of fruits, and therefore I'm going to cut them, or pay the kavri, I want the fish. The fish does the produce, does the peiros. So there's in fact a machlokes in the Gemara, or two lishoinis, amri la peiros. Some people say these are peiros, and therefore the husband has the right to all of them. The amri la karna says, no, does the karen. How do you define, according to the mandiyoma, karen? Says the Gemara, kol de milza, this kol de milza is going on the second mandiyoma that holds that it's karen. Kol de milza, gizay machlif peira, and gizay machlif karna. Gizay machlif means, if this tree, when you cut it down, if it will rejuvenate and regrow once again, so then what you have cut off is peiros. Why? Because the keren is going to remain. How is it going to remain? Even though I cut the tree, and you know, there are other Gemaras in Bava Basra that talk about if it was up to the first knot or the second knot, knot with a K, a knot that you have inside the tree, that if you cut above that knot, then some trees will rejuvenate. If you cut below that knot, then that's the end of that tree. So we're saying about those trees which gives a machlif, which do rejuvenate, so then, says this man the Omar, then it would be considered peiros, because then you can go and cut the top of the tree, the first third, two thirds, whatever it happens to be, because it'll grow again. So he has the peiros, and she retains the keren, she retains the stump of the tree, which will rejuvenate. However, if it's an engiz a machlif, that if you're going to cut down half of the tree, the rest of the tree is essentially dead, and it's not going to rejuvenate, so then it's Karen, this is the Karen. You have no right to go and kill her Karen. So therefore, says the Gemara, that's why the Abazardisa apparently are the types of trees where they do not, not ein gizay machlif, and therefore it's karna, and that's really according to that man the Omar, it remains with her, and he does not have the right to go and cut it and take it for himself. Rather, he'll have to go and sell it yikach ben karka, and from that karka he can go and get the peches.
So who will buy the transaction? Confuses me.
Why does it confuse you?
If I have a field that's who's going to buy it if all it's useful and you're going to clear it away? I don't understand. We're saying here's something that has a value either as to be consumed or as a regenerating a principle.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So if it's just to be consumed, I should sell it mm-hmm. and then buy something, you know, good property that will produce an income. But who's going to buy this from me? The person who's going to buy it from me. What are they going to do with it?
It's worth money.
So you're going to use it for firewood, they use it for construction wood. Okay. But the point is, she'll now have $100, $200, $500.
She'll buy proceeds from the sale of this firewood.
Right.
So
not of the firewood, of the field, of these trees. Whatever the guy wants, he can go and build a treehouse on top of it.
But the field remains. So after you so sell all the
field. The field is separate. We're talking about the wood itself. Either that she only received the wood, or she received the field with the wood. And the field we're not talking about. The field, of course, is Karen that belongs to her.
Okay.
Whatever grows out of it.
That answers my question.
Okay, very good. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. And the Gemara starts on another type of peiros. The type of peiros, which means velodois. And the Gemara is going to talk about what happens if she receives, for instance, behemoth as her Yerusha, and those behemoths have velodois. Does velodois belong to him? Does it belong to her? Is that considered to be peiros? And that's going to be the next discussion. Omer Rav Zeira, Omer Rav Oishi, Omer Rav Yanai, V'amri lo, Omer Rav Abba, Omer Rav Oishi, Omer Rav Yanai. Hagoinev velad behemoth melug. So now let's think about this for a moment. L'choyra, since this is the velad of the behemoth melug, the behemoth l'choyra belongs to her, it's the Karen, it's her behemoth. And the velad is the choyra peiros, right? Peiros of the... So what would I say about these peiros? The peiros l'choyra should belong to the husband. Nevertheless, somewhat l'choyra difficult to understand, says Rabbi Yanai, that mishalim teshlumi kefa, the ganav who stole it has to go and pay double l'isha. To isha, l'choyra should be to the Baal. So Gemara, mi keman l'chori, this halacha doesn't stem. Loike rabbanu, loike chananya. Who's rabbanu? Who's chananya? This ani without a brisa. Vlad behemas melug, the vlodois of behemas melug go to the Baal. L'chori double pasha.
Peiros.
Vlad shivchas melug goes the isha. The vlodois of the shivchas melug go the isha. Why would that go to the isha? Why isn't that the same thing? The velodis of the shivcha go to the isha. So Rashi already points out, and we're going to see this in the Gemara another two or three lines, because if I'm going to give all the velodis to the husband, ultimately this shivcha will stop producing velodis. Number one, because she's going to die eventually, 120. And number two, at some point, her possibility of being able to go and have children, as we know, women can't give children until they're 100 or 120, unless they're nisim and nefloys, but otherwise, under normal nature, the laws of Teva that Kodesh Baruch Hu created, a woman can't have children beyond whatever the age happens to be. So therefore, if the husband is going to constantly pluck out the velodis and keep it for himself, ultimately there won't be any Karen left in this shivcha. So therefore, the Tanakamu l'choyra holds. I think Mara is going to talk about this in another moment.
How could he pluck? I mean, she had the baby.
I don't mean pluck of it. Literally. What I mean is figuratively.
The name also has a limitation to it. Same thing.
Exactly.
Oh, so you're going to ask, what's the dafki minute?
Right.
That's going to be the Gemara's kasher, Rabbi Yisai. The Gemara is going to ask another two, three lines. We're going to see that another moment. But in the meantime, the Gemara makes a distinction between the Vlad Behemas Maluk and the Vlad Shivchas Maluk, that in one case, by the Behema, apparently I'm not noivous that the Behema is going to die and stop reproducing, but by the Shivcha, I am concerned about that, and therefore, if I'm going to allow the husband to take all the Vlades, eventually there won't be any Karen left for the wife, and therefore leave the Vlades with the wife, so she can have now future Shvachois, future Vlades, because his Vlad eventually will grow up and get married, or meet with an Eved, whatever. There'll be future kids. Okay, that's so far the Tanakam. Chananya ben Achi Yoshia Omar, also Vlad Shivchas Maluk, ki Vlad Behemas Maluk, that the Halacha by Shivcha is exactly the same thing by the Vlad Behema, and therefore it goes Lebal. So before we continue on, what is now the machloikis between the Tanakama and Chananya? The Tanakama, or the Gemara calls the Tanakama Rabbanon. The Rabbanon hold the Hemas Malug Lebal, only by the Shifchas Malug Leisha. Well, Chananya said that even the Vlad of the Shifcha has the same din as the Vlad of the Behema, and it goes Lebal. Kum techois, by the case of the Behema, everybody agrees it goes to the Baal. The holy machlok is l'gabe the shivcha, where the Rabbanan say v'lad shivcha malug is li'isha, and Chananya says that v'lad shivcha's malug is kivlad behemoth malug, and it also goes to the Baal. So the whole machlok is only by the shivcha, but by the behema, everybody agrees it goes to the Baal. Is it bizarre? Is it shver? Why did Rabbi Yana say on the Amud Aleph and now onto the Amud Beis that are going to v'lad behemoth malug? Mishal tishlume keifa li'isha kimaloike Rabbanan. Right? Because both of them hold the Vlad Bengus Velug goes to the Baal. Everybody agrees? Yeah. Everybody wants an Ishver. Afilateima Dibri Hakoil Peira. Or Afilateima Dibri Hakoil Peira Tekin Le Rabbanon. Peira de Peira Le Tekin Le Rabbanon. What's the main thing, Gemara Chizhong? The Gemara says in the Tat Mishalim Teshlume Kefil Le Isha. What means Kefil? It means you got to go and pay double. What means double? One is the Karen, and one is the additional Knas that the Torah said you got to go and pay a second Tashlumen. The Kevel Tashlumen goes Leisha, but the Karen Tashlumen Taka goes to the Baal. So if this Vlad Behemoth Malug was worth $100, the Ganef has to go and pay back $200. $100 is going to go and belong to the Baal. Everybody says that. The Rabbanan and the Chananya both agree Vlad Behemoth Malug, Baal. Yeah, $100 goes to the Baal for sure. What about the Knas, the second $100? It doesn't go to the Baal, that goes back to the Isha. Why? Because that's already Peiris to Peiris. The original Peiris stays in the log, that goes to the Baal. But the Peiris to Peiris, in other words, that right to receive the double, the Knas of Kefal, that the Chum didn't
the
give him.
Really.
Exactly, that's the Peiris of the Peiris. And the Peiris of the Peiris didn't give to him, they only gave to her Peiris.
So the Isha has right to the grandchildren?
Well, not talking about the grandchildren. You're talking about the Vlad Nechsim Maluk. You have a Bahima. That Bahima gave birth to a Vlad. A Ganav came and stole that Vlad, and that Vlad was worth $100. Now the Bezin, no, they have two.
It's already a live animal. It's not longer
Vlad. It's a Vlad. Right. A Vlad means a live animal. Yeah, otherwise, it's an Uber. Uber inside is a fetus. A Vlad means it's born. It's a born again, not a born again, born the first time. Anyway, so you have a born first time Vlad, and this Vlad is worth $100, and a Ganav came and he snatched it away. He's a bad guy. And there were two Aydimitasor, Unasor, whatever it was, they come to Bezin, Bezin Paskins, you're a Ganav, he has to go and pay $200. Right? No problem. The Vlad is already dead. He sold it, he ate it, whatever. He pays $200.
Who does it
$200? I'm sorry?
He sold it, he pays $200.
Okay, so put that aside. Fine. Thank you very much. Anyway, getting back to our Gemara now. So now we have a situation, he has to pay $200. So who does the $200 go to? So before we didn't make any distinction, we thought, okay, Felicia, she gets the whole $200. So no. You can't be that way. Because both Chananya and the Rabbanan hold that Vlad Behemoth Malug doesn't belong to her. It belongs to him. So the $200 should go to him. That was Yimora's kasha, not to her. Says you want to make a shtikl yachloik or shtikl pshar. What's a shtikl pshar? Avad the Vlad itself, the original $100 Vlad belongs to him. It's Vlad Nechsim Malug. However, the right to the additional $100, that's not his automatically. That's the payrois to payrois. That second $100, that goes to her and not to him.
So that's
a payroll. We don't mean grandchildren. Great grandchildren.
It was a situation where there was no Ganesh. It was just, there was a Vlad, and then the Vlad had a Vlad.
The Vlad belongs to him. That's his. Once it's his, he can do whatever he wants with it. He can sell it, he can buy it, he can use it, But that's, once it's his, that he does whatever he wants with it. You have to look in the Mefarshim more about things like that. Kenzan may be Chweisish, but Lamasa, it's his. Getting back to our Gemara now. So now this is the question that Rabbi Yoin asked before, and Barry asked before, and everybody else was all incensed and agitated. How could the Rabbanan make a distinction between the Behemas Malug and the Shifchas Malug? Then in one case it says Baal, one said Isha. So we said that Rashi already says Koshema Tomus is both the same thing. Chananya that says that in all cases, both by the Behema and by the Shifcha, that you give the Vlad to the husband, maybe the mommy's going to die and there won't be any Karen left. I'm not worried. I'm not choshish lemisa. I understand that. El rabbanan, I choshish lemisa fil v'lad behemus v'lug nami. V'lug choshish lemisa fil v'lad shibchad v'lug nami. Make up your mind. It's like mamon of shach. Both behemus and lahavdil people pass away whenever they pass away. So if I'm worried about misa, I should be worried about misa in both cases. And therefore there won't be any Karen left. And therefore don't give all the v'ladis away to the baal, but rather leave something or leave all of them to the isha, because otherwise you'll be stuck with nothing. Or if you're not choshish, so then give everything. So how are you distinguishing between the behemoth, right? That was your question? Good gefreit. Everything while the oilam chai shlemis. Behemoths, we are chai shlemis. And therefore, I should say that leave the vlodis with the mami. Why should I leave the vlodis with the mami? Because, and the mami meaning the wife, the isha, because eventually the mami of the behemoths or the mami of these avodah meshvachas is going to die. There won't be any Karen left, and therefore give the vlodis to do a continuation of the Karen, give it to the isha. That's what I should say. The reason why Bahaim is different than a Vlad Shivcha, Vishani Bahaima de Ika Oira, meaning that even though I won't have the full Karen, but I'll have part of the Karen. And even though the Gemara only talks about the Oira Lachori, the same thing would apply. You have the flesh, you can go and sell it for tarifas for Nevela flesh. Which means is, if there won't be any Karen left whatsoever, like Gemara said before in the Amud Aleph, Ein Gizei Machlif, I'm going to go and cut down this tree and give it to the husband, then the tree will not rejuvenate, there won't be anything left. That's Karen. Karen means that it has to be something that it could have future payers for many, many years to come. And therefore we're saying is, even though this behaima, it's dead now and won't have any further velodis, but it's not that we've lost the entire Karen, because I still have the or it could be sold, especially if it's a nice or with a pretty and everything. You can make a fancy woman's pocketbook, and if you call it Gucci or some other fancy schmancy name, then it'll go up to that 1,000 times in value, etc. So there is some value left. Masha Enkin, when this shivcha dies, shivcha is dead, or you have these burial expenses, you have nothing else.
Can you give me others for maybe that by the behemoth there's no bechira in the payers, but by the shivcha, you know, she's not going to be happy that her payers keep going there.
Yeah, but it's not the shivcha is not the has no authority over here. It's the well, husband or wife that owns the shivcha, but not the.
She could choose not to partake and not have.
No. She can decide not to go and procreate, not to live with somebody.
Right.
She can use a contraceptive.
Yeah, but she's not allowed to.
Whether she does, the point over here is, if and when she has children, I mean, she may be barren because she has no children. If and when she has children, the question is, who does the child belong to? Does it belong to the Baal? Does it belong to the Isha? Anyway, beginning back to our Gemara, Zokti Gemara by the Behema, there's always going to be Karen, therefore, says Hananya, you can give away all the blood to the Baal, the Behema will die, and the Behema will die, no, there's still some value left. But by the Shivcha, you can't give everything away to the Baal, because if the Shivcha is going to die, there'll be nothing left. Good. How do we pass on the Funa Barchiya Amish Mul? Halacha Kechananya. Amr Abba Amr Abba Nachman Abba Gabdi Amish Mul, Halacha Kechananya, Moide Kechananya. Shim Nizgarsha, Noi Senes Domim, Vin Noi Losan, but Nei Shvach Beis Ovia. So now the Gemara is really adding now a new halacha which we didn't touch on until now. And what we're saying now is that by certain payrois, it's not only the money value of them, but there's also the sentimental value as well as the honor and glory of these peiros vis-a-vis the owners of the peiros. Meaning, as we know the concept of something which has sentimental value, that you have a piece of jewelry, I yarshined it from my great-great-great-grandmother, and she wore it under the chuppah, and she was benched at the chuppah by Reb Shaila Kerestir at the time of the chuppah, so therefore this has tremendous value. The person in the street, you go and try to sell them 47, she goes, I give you $100 for it. $100 for me, it's worth $1 million. The point is there's a sentimental value which attaches to it. The Gemara is saying over here is, what happens if you have these vlodos of the shift? Now, vlod of the shivcha doesn't mean little babies. Eventually, these vlodos are going to grow up to be avodim and shvachas. She received this shivcha nechse maluk from her grandfather, so she's very, very proud of the avodim and shvachas that she received because they were nice to her and nice to her grandfather, and a fancy butler, and he wore a nice uniform, and it really looked it was ganz derech eretz and all the rest. So now, even though he the husband is entitled to those v'lodois, to the new avodim shvachas that have grown from that original shivcha. What happens now that Nebuchadnezzar get? And she says, I'd like to have those shvachas for me. And he said, what are you talking about? It's Nachsim Malug, it's the Vlad Shivchas Malug. Didn't we say it belongs to me? That's what Hananya says, that it belongs to the Baal. However, what she has the right to do is redeem them. She can go and pay. She doesn't get it for free. Yeah, Baal Korcha. Even if he says, I don't want to sell, she's allowed to send his domim. About it has to be the real appraised value. Yeah, your fair value. But she can give the fair value, that lesson, and she can go and take him. Nay, Shmach Beisavia, because this is the Teferis, the glory of her father's home. In other words, the sentimental value aspect. And the Gemara in the next Mishnah is going to focus on that more. Another 10 lines, Mitch, in the next Mishnah we're going to talk about the Inyan of Shmach Beisavia. But now we're going to talk again from here till the almost till the end of the Gemara before we get to the Mishnah. We're going to talk about this inyan of that there's still some value left to the Karen. So we said a moment ago that even though this behem will eventually die, but even if it dies, it still has some remainder value for the or, for the treif of flesh, epis is noch du. So Gemara is going to go with that gang, with that approach, the Gemara is going to give another bunch of examples. It's Omer Rava, Omer of Nachman, Hechnisaloi Eiz L'cholva. She receives as part of her Nichsim Malug an Eiz. Eiz, of course, is a goat. Now, points out Rashi, a goat, we're not going to go and talk about its giza, because right after that we have Rochel L'gizasa. Rochel means a ewe, which is a female shepsel. Female shepsel, right? Female lamb, female sheep. That's L'gizasa, because we know by sheep, the sheep have, of course, wool, and therefore that has value for the wool. The Eiz really doesn't have wool, it only has goat's hair. And the Gemara says in other places they used to use goat's hair to make sackcloth out of. So it had some value, but nothing. Anyway, so the real payrus of an Eiz is the milk that it produces. The Rochel, its real value is the Giza. And Rashi says, by the Rochel, also the milk, but we're not focusing on the milk because that's already kind of secondary. The major value by the Rochel is the Giza, is the wool. Tanakoil is the Beit Zasa. You have a hen and the hen lays eggs. So the eggs, that's the payrus. A dekel, if you have a dekel, you have a tree, is the payrus of the payrus, the dates that grow from the tree. So all of these, oichel v'hoylech, the Baal receives all of these, achetich lakeren, even when the Eiz and the Rochel and the Tanagoilis and Dekel are getting on in their lives, where they go to the veterinarian, and the veterinarian says this Eiz only has another 30 days to live, nevertheless, he can continue taking the milk, and if the Rochel is also only 30 days to live, he can continue getting the Giza, there won't be any Karen left. In each case, there will be Karen left. Now, what is the Karen left of all of these things? So Rashi says, like we said a moment ago, for instance, if you're talking about the animals, the Eiz and the Rochel, you have the Oirois. What do you, and presumably also the flesh, what do you have from the Tanagoilis? Rashi says, the Tanagoilis, you have Noitzosa. Noitza is the feathers. I guess feathers you'd use in down pillows or down quilts, and you'd also sell it to Sofrim to be able to use, and now it's to Sofrim to anybody. In the good old days, they didn't have fountain pens, and they didn't have ballpoint pens. But everybody used quilts for purposes of writing. At least those people that were intelligent enough and educated knew how to write. So the point is that there was a market for the feathers. And the dekel peris, the dekel, of course, once it dries out, it doesn't produce trees, it doesn't produce peris, but there's still some value that you can sell it for firewood, for construction wood. So in each one of these cases, the keren doesn't get totally destroyed, like we talked about the behema ikka oira, and that's why the Baal can continue eating the income from all of these things, or all of these animals, or fowl, until tichla keren, because it won't be tichla keren, there'll always be some keren remaining. Amr of Nachman, so Rav Nachman says similarly, now Rav Nachman is even a greater chidush. What happens if Ayla lay glima? What happens if she brought into the marriage a brand new Bekisha, very, very, very pretty, very beautiful, very handsome, and he wears it. So Peter Hava, he can go and wear this Bekisha alt Peiros, even though, of course, as a result, the Bekisha is going to lose value, it'll get worn out. Mechzi beva ozel ad dekalia. He can use it until it gets essentially destroyed, until it gets totally worn out. What is the value left? Since Rashi has value of Shmata, so you can use it at least for Shmata. If you can go and sell the Shmata, or at least you can use it to go and wipe up anytime something spills. So it has some value. So that's the greatest chiddush of Rav Nachman, even though it doesn't have a big value with a capital V, a small value. but at least it's not totally kaloi hakeren.
But it would be devalued completely.
Then apparently that would be called keren. That's what the Gemara said in the Yomar Aleph. If it's ein gizay machlef, that once you take away the pages, there's nothing left, then you wouldn't be able to go and destroy the whole keren. But here, since there is something left, he can wear it until it becomes shmatis. It's not a problem. Kiman, where do we find this concept? Ki Aitana, like the following Tana. The following Tana means we're going to have a machloikas, a mayor, and the chachamim about other types of things where once you take away the payrois, is the choyre, there's no karen left. What is that, Bryce? The sanya. Hamelach vi hachoyl. Melech explains Rashi is how did people get salt? And in fact, this is the way they mine the salt even today. If you go to Yam HaMelech in Eretz Yisrael, you'll see that their major salt factory is right next to the Yam HaMelech. How do they make it? You have some of the salty water from the sea comes onto the ground. They make ditches. They let it stand in those ditches, in those ponds. Then after that, it dries out because of the sun. And the water, of course, evaporates, and the salt is left over. That salt, of course, has value to it. You buy salt in the store, you know that it has value. Same thing as choyl. Choyl is earth. This earth, says Rashi, is earth which is being used for making cement, making mortar to go and build buildings, for instance. Okay, so now what happens if she received a piece of property, for instance, on the seashore, where there is melech constantly standing as a result of the water coming into these ditches, these ponds, and then melech is produced? Who does that melech belong to? Or similarly, if there's choyl on her property, which can be used to go and make cement, who has the right to it? Dr. De Bryce has a Pedis. This is Pedis which belongs to him. It doesn't belong to her. If you look at the Rashi quickly,
even though it's canon also.
That's the Chiddush of the Bryce. If you look at the Rashi about five lines higher than the Bryce, Hamelech v'Hachoyl is Eitu of the Zayt. Hamelech v'Chol is Rashi. Not lo Yerusha al Tzvasayam. Oh, she has Yerusha on the seashore, next to the sea. Charitzin are like ditches, ponds. Asuyin Shemei Hayam Nichnosim Behem. They are constructed in such a way that whenever the waves of the sea come onto the seashore, they come into those charitz and into those ditches. And then after that, the water gets caught there. And then ultimately, the sun comes and says, tricking to souls. It dries it up, and therefore there's no water left. Oh, and now I have salt! If you look at the passage in Yeshua, you'll see that this is already an altamas, and not only from the times of Chazal, back in the times of Yeshua, that they also had, that's how they manufactured, that's how they got salt. We're not talking about any earth, we're talking about earth that can be used and has such a quality that you can be used for binyan, for cement, for mortar, etc.
You use such a lotion also by charitzin oblitus.
Oh, yeah. By the guy, the asteroid. Yeah. How does it pay his next Rashi? Why don't we say it's Karen? Go and sell it and give her the money and take the money and use for payers, etc., etc. Vehicle ben karka, barzri, and go and buy a karka barzri. The fisha ain't period kololi oilam. You're going to have sea waves in Meir Hashem from now until Mashiach and beyond Mashiach. These sea waves are going to go and make melech, and there's an endless amount of choil in the world, as we know. There's plenty of earth. Yeah,
was up there. Endless amount on our property.
Oh, okay. But even if you dig a lot of earth, there's still going to be something below, right? Even if you make a major crater, you still have the property down below. You'll have to walk down below, and then you'll plant it eventually with beautiful grass, and then people say this is the Grand Canyon, and you'll make money from the tourists. But the point is, it does, the keren remains. Even if you remove the topsoil and another layer
something
down below, you can't go all the way down to the core of the earth, there won't be anything left. Or you reach China if you go to the other side. Okay, if you reach China, you'll make more money when you reach China. You'll be able to get tourists to go all through the earth. That's on Lebedik. Anyway, but getting back to our Gemara, so therefore there is Karen. Everybody agrees in this case that these are corpatis and they go to the Baal. But now what happens if you're talking about the pier shall gofris, mach poiris shall thrith? Now what does this mean? This means a quarry from which you dig out the sulfur, or you dig out the thrith. Rashi says it's alum, which may or may not be related to aluminum, vesalmish. But anyway, it's some place that you go and dig things out. And if you remember from yesterday or the day before's Gemara, that in by copper, it has a terrible, terrible stench, and therefore the wife can go and say, this is amum. But we're not talking about that now. We're talking now the value of azapir shel gof, the machpar shel trif. Here there's already a machloikis. What's the reason why this is Karen? Why the reason why this is Peiros? Because in fact, this quarry is used to go and dig out from it the sulfur or dig out from it the alum.
It's not endless.
Exactly. And once you go and take out all of that stuff, all you're going to have is the karka down below. The question is that already roi lizri or not? Is that considered to be koli kula karen or not? And that's where the machloikis lies between Reb Meir and the chum, the gabi. That's why that's different than the case of the melech and the chay. Good. Anyway, getting back to our Mishnah, at the end of the Mishnah we said, Reb Shimon said somewhat poetically, the Makam Shiyofa Koichai Beknisasa, Hura Koichai Beknisasa, and if it was Hura Koichai Beknisasa, then it's Yofa Koichai Beknisasa. In fact, you know, Reb Shimon, the only case that was relevant that we were talking about is the case of if she brought in Peiros Mechubarim Lekarka, that Reb Shimon said, Beknisasa Shaloi belongs to him, Beknisasa Shaloi belongs to her, and we said, Beknisasa Shaloi belongs to him, so the Chamachlik is in the Mishnah between a man and a Chacham. Is the Charaid of Shimon hold like the Chachamim? My Benaya, what's the Nafkin? Amar Rava Avad, in that case, the Mechubarim B'Shas Knisasa, we talk about a great ride that Shimon holds exactly like Tanakama, no Machlokes. So what is the Machlokes? Mechubarim B'Shas Yitzia Eke Benaya. Ooh, what happens if the time of the Get Rechas V'Sholim, that on the trees there happen to be Peiros? She gets back the trees, there's no question about it. That's the Karen, that's her Nechsim. Look, the question is, what about the Peiros? Oh, the Chachamim didn't address that Shaila. Reb Shimon says, "Befeirushu b'tziyasa shelah, it belongs to her." Says the Gemara, "I'll let you in on a secret." The Chachamim disagree. The Chachamim say that those Peiros Mechubarim belong to him because they grew b'shusai when they were still married. So therefore, whatever that value is, how do you determine the value? Like we had early in the Mishnah, you'll sell it, you'll determine how much a Peiros, a field mit Peiros, a field without Peiros, whatever that value is, goes to him. So therefore, bottom line is, on the b'tziyasa shelah, in that there is a machloikis between the Chachamim and Reb Shimon. Look to next the Mishnah. This Mishnah should be familiar to us because we repeat some of the principles that we spoke about before. Naflu lo avodim ushvachis zikainim. Shonan al te'evresh al te'shivcha. They are not producing any new offspring. What are their peiros? Very shvacha peiros. Maybe they're too feeble even to work. Who knows? So what's the din now? Yimachu, sell them, yikovan karka, and take karka v'oichu peiros. In other words, it's like ksofim. The kesef itself doesn't produce anything, only if you invest it. Oh, so invest these avodim shvachas by selling them, taking the money and buying karka v'oichu peiros like we had before. Rav Shimon Gamliel oimer, loin timkar, mepnei shehein shvach beisavia. Now, although it says the Mishnah loy timkar, which sounds like it's a blanket rule, you're not allowed to sell it, Rashi says, yechoyle hili akev. She can go and say, sorry fellows, those avodim and shvachas have been in my family for the last 80 years. How do you think they became 80 years old? You think they became 80 years old yesterday? They were born, I remember my grandparents were so happy with these avodim shvachas, and they were such good and tireless workers, so dedicated and committed. They were wonderful avodim shvachas. I want to keep them, even though Nebuch they're now out of Zakenim, but I want to keep them. Okay, so what's the halacha? Says Reb Shimon Gamliel, she can be ma'akim and say, no, we're not selling them. Shvach b'sevir, because that's part of the glory, the sentimental value that comes along with the household. Now we have a similar machloikis, but with different mandiyamim. Again, the Tanakhama says, Nafal azeisim ukfanim zikainim, shen alta baima, which apparently are no longer producing any material amount of fruit, perhaps no fruit at all, or very, very little. Oh, same thing as Tanaka. She can go and say with pride, these Zaytsim and Gefanim have been in our family for now for tens of years, hundreds of years. I don't want to go and sell it. Notice this Rabbi Yehuda, not Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, says the Pnei Yeshua Yeshua, apparently Reb Shimon Gamliel says only by Avodah Mishpachas can you go and say, like that's the pride, that's the honor, that's the emotional, exactly. But people shouldn't get too emotional about trees. A tree is here today, it's not done tomorrow. You can have an Avodah Shifchas Taka dedicated and committed, and you feel like part of the Mishpacha, invited to all the Simchas, etc. But Zeisun Gefanim, Reb Shimon Gamliel holds there's no sentimental value, but Reb Yehuda holds that there is. That's why you have Reb Yehuda at the end of the Mishnah and not Reb Shimon Gamliel.
Apparently,
that we spoke about these Zeisim and Gefanim, Machloikis Shenoflu Besodesh Shelah, that she received a field together with the Zeisim and Gefanim, not just the Zeisim and Gefanim on their own, but attached to a field. If the only thing that she received was only the Zeisim Kfanim, if you're going to allow these Zeisim and Kfanim to stand here for another year or two or three, they're all going to dry out. There's not going to be anything left because they're already Zeisim. So therefore, in such a case, everybody would agree, go and sell them to be able to retain the value and take that value, go and buy another karka and you'll have payers for the husband. Yeah. Mask with Rabbi Yosef said, not so simple. After all, Legabe, Zeisim, and Gefanim, you can clear, are we talking about, are they attached to a field or not attached to a field? But Avon Mishvachim are not attached to anything, right? And therefore, they're going to die, there won't be anything left. And nevertheless, there is a machloikis. So how are you talking?
Close, because Avon Mishvachim can close.
All right. Okay, fine. Okay. Anyway, but the point is that how come you are saying Rav Kahana Marav, the machloikis is only b'sadeh shalah, b'sadeh shenir tolah divrei akol timkar, the same svarah should apply to Avon Mishvachis. And we don't see that Rav Kahana Marav says it over there, because in fact, Avon Mishvachis, by definition, ain hasadeh shalah, meaning they're not attached to a property, they're on their own. And nevertheless, we see that there is a machloikis. So perhaps in the sefer there's also machloikis, even b'sadeh shenir shalah, just like by Avon Mishvachis are k'sadeh shenir shalah dami. So Timur, you're absolutely right. And therefore, we're going to reverse it, mikotze lekotze. Eli itmar hochi itmar, omer b'kana marav, machloike b'sodeh she'ene shalah. If the sodeh does not belong to her, she only received the zeisim and gefanim, there Rabbi Yehuda says, loitimkar, because they have sentimental value. Says the Tanakama, sentiment, shmentiment. The Baal says, I want to get peyrois, you can go and sell them, because after all, these zeisim and gefanim, sekein. If there is Karen, if there's an actual field, then everybody would agree, don't go and sell them, and they shvach beisavir, because of the pride that she has in these zeisim ekranim that we've had for so many years. So therefore, she can be moich and say, don't go and sell them after all. So therefore, it's not that the machloikis is besodeh shalah, and everybody agrees besodeh she'enah shalah, but the machloikis besodeh she'enah shalah, but besodeh shalah, everybody would agree that she can be ma'akiv leitimkar because of the glory of her family. Have a wonderful